Chapter 35. I show levity. But even if I had not owned everything, and knew all, it is not altogether such a grievous thing. ... You mean to say that it is not grievous, even if a man does love a woman, and suffers all the pain of feeling he loves in vain? Well, I say it is quite the reverse, and I have grounds for knowing. ... Now, don't fume so, George Somerset, but hear me. My not owning all may not have the dreadful meaning you think, and therefore it may not be really such a grievous thing. There are genuine reasons for women's conduct in these matters as well as for men's, though it is sometimes supposed to be regulated entirely by caprice. And if I do not give way to every feeling I mean demonstration, it is because I don't want to. There now, you know what that implies, and be content. Very well, ... said Somerset, with repressed sadness, I will not expect you to say more. But you do like me a little, Paula? ... Now. ... She said, shaking her head with symptoms of tenderness and looking into his eyes. What have you just promised? Perhaps I like you a little more than a little, which is much too much. Yes, Shakespeare says so, and he is always right. Do you still doubt me? Ah, I see you do. ... Because somebody has stood nearer to you tonight than I ... a fogey like him. Half as old again as either of us. How can you mind him? What shall I do to show you that I do not for a moment let him come between me and you? ... It is not for me to suggest what you should do. Though what you should permit me to do is obvious enough. ... She dropped her voice. You mean, permit you to do really, and in earnest what he only seemed to do in the play. ... Somerset signified by a look that such had been his thought. Paula was silent. No, ... she murmured at last. That cannot be. He did not, nor must you. ... It was said nonetheless decidedly for being spoken low. You quite resent such a suggestion. You have a right to. I beg your pardon, not for speaking of it, but for thinking it. ... I don't resent it at all, and I am not offended one bit. But I am not the less of opinion that it is possible to be premature in some things, and to do this just now would be premature. I know what you would say, that you would not have asked it, but for that unfortunate improvisation of it in the play. But that I was not responsible for, and therefore owe no reparation to you now. Listen. ... Paula. Where in the world are you? ... was heard resounding along the corridor in the voice of her aunt. Our friends are all ready to leave, and you will surely bid them good night. ... I must be gone. I won't ring for you to be shown out come this way. ... But how will you get on in repeating the play tomorrow evening, if that interpolation is against your wish? ... He asked, looking her hard in the face. I'll think it over during the night. Come tomorrow morning to help me settle. But, ... she added, with coy yet genial independence, listen to me. Not a word more about what you asked for, mind. I don't want to go so far, and I will, not just yet anyhow, I mean perhaps never. You must promise that, or I cannot see you again alone. ... It shall be as you request. ... Very well. And not a word of this to a soul. My aunt suspects. But she is a good aunt, and will say nothing. Now that is clearly understood, I should be glad to consult with you tomorrow early. I will come to you in the studio or Pleasance, as soon as I am disengaged. ... She took him to a little chamfered doorway in the corner, which opened into a descending turret, and Somerset went down. When he had unfastened the door at the bottom, and stepped into the lower corridor, she asked, are you down? ... And on receiving an affirmative reply, she closed the top door. X. Somerset was in the studio the next morning about 10 o'clock superintending the labors of Knowles, Bowles, and Cockton, whom he had again engaged to assist him with the drawings on his appointment to carry out the works. When he had set them going, he ascended the staircase of the great tower for some purpose that bore upon the forthcoming repairs of this part. Passing the door of the telegraph room, he heard little sounds from the instrument, which somebody was working. Only two people in the castle, to the best of his knowledge, knew the trick of this: Miss Power, and a page in her service called John. Miss Destancy could also dispatch messages, but she was at Myrtle Villa. The door was closed, and much as he would have liked to enter, the possibility that Paula was not the performer led him to withhold his steps. He went on to where the uppermost masonry had resisted the mighty hostility of the elements for 500 years without receiving worse dilapidation than half a century produces upon the face of man. But he still wondered who was telegraphing, and whether the message bore on housekeeping, architecture, theatricals, or love. Could Somerset have seen through the panels of the door in passing, he would have beheld the room occupied by Paula alone. It was she who sat at the instrument, and the message she was dispatching ran as under: Can you send down a competent actress, who will undertake the part of Princess of France in Ove's Labors Lost this evening in a temporary theater here? Dresses already provided suitable to a lady about the middle height. State price. Apostrophe, the telegram was addressed to a well-known theatrical agent in London. Off went the message, and Paula retired into the next room, leaving the door open between that and the one as he had just quitted. Here she busied herself with writing some letters, till in less than an hour the telegraph instrument showed signs of life, and as he hastened back to its side, the reply received from the agent was as follows: Miss Barbara Bell of the Regent's Theatre could come. Quite competent. Her terms would be about 25 guineas. Apostrophe, without a moment's pause, Paula returned for answer: The terms are quite satisfactory. Apostrophe, apostrophe, presently she heard the instrument again, and emerging from the next room in which as he had passed the intervening time as before, she read: Miss Barbara Bell's terms were accidentally understated. They would be 40 guineas, in consequence of the distance. I'm waiting at the office for a reply. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Paula set to work, as before, and replied: Quite satisfactory. Only let her come at once. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she did not leave the room this time, but went to an narrow slit hard by, and gazed out at the trees till the instrument began to speak again, returning to it with a leisurely manner, implying a full persuasion that the matter was settled. She was somewhat surprised to learn that Miss Bell, in stating her terms, understands that she will not be required to leave London till the middle of the afternoon. If it is necessary for her to leave at once, 10 guineas extra would be indispensable, on account of the great inconvenience of such a short notice. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Paula seemed a little vexed, but not much concerned. She sent back with a readiness scarcely politic in the circumstances: She must start at once. Price agreed to. Apostrophe, her impatience for the answer was mixed with curiosity as to whether it was due to the agent or to Miss Barbara Bell that the prices had grown like Jack's beanstalk in the negotiation. Another telegram duly came: Traveling expenses are expected to be paid. Apostrophe, apostrophe, with decided impatience she dashed off. Of course, but nothing more will be agreed to. Apostrophe, apostrophe, then, and only then, came the desired reply: Miss Bell starts by the 12 o'clock train. Apostrophe, apostrophe, this business being finished, Paula left the chamber and descended into the enclosure called the Pleasance, a spot grassed down like a lawn. Here stood Somerset, who, having come down from the tower, was looking on while a man searched for old foundations under the sod with a crowbar. He was glad to see her at last, and noticed that she looked serene and relieved, but could not for the moment divine the cause. Paula came near, returned his salutation, and regarded the man's operations in silence a while till his work led him to a distance from him. Do you still wish to consult me? Asked Somerset. About the building, perhaps, said she. Not about the play. But you said so? Yes, but it will be unnecessary. Somerset thought this meant skittishness, and merely bowed. You mistake me as usual, she said, in a low tone. I am not going to consult you on that matter, because I have done all you could have asked for without consulting you. I take no part in the play tonight. Forgive my momentary doubt. Somebody else will play for me, an actress from London. But on no account must the substitution be known beforehand, or the performance tonight will never come off. And that I should much regret. Captain Destancy will not play his part if he knows you will not play yours. That's what you mean? You may suppose it is, she said, smiling. And to guard against this, you must help me to keep the secret by being my confederate. To be Paula's confederate. Today, indeed, time had brought him something worth waiting for. In anything. Cried Somerset. Only in this. Said she, with soft severity. And you know what you have promised, George. And you remember there is to be no what we talked about. Now will you go in the one-horse brougham to Markton Station this afternoon, and meet the 4 o'clock train? Inquire for a lady for Stancy Castle, a Miss Bell, see her safely into the carriage, and send her straight on here. I am particularly anxious that she should not enter the town, for I think she once came to Markton in a starring company, and she might be recognized, and my plan be defeated. Thus she instructed her lover and devoted friend, and when he could stay no longer he left her in the garden, to return to his studio. As Somerset went in by the garden door, he met a strange-looking personage coming out by the same passage, a stranger, with the manner of a Dutchman, the face of a smelter, and the clothes of an inhabitant of Guiana. The stranger, whom we have already seen sitting at the back of the theater the night before, looked hard from Somerset to Paula, and from Paula again to Somerset, as he stepped out. Somerset had an unpleasant conviction that this queer gentleman had been standing for some time in the doorway unnoticed, quizzing him and his mistress as they talked together. If so, he might have learned a secret. When he arrived upstairs, Somerset went to a window commanding a view of the garden. Paula still stood in her place, and the stranger was earnestly conversing with her. Soon they passed round the corner and disappeared. It was now time for him to see about starting for Markton, an intelligible zest for circumventing the ardent and coercive captain of artillery, saving him from any unnecessary delay in the journey. He was at the station 10 minutes before the train was due, and when it drew up to the platform, the first person to jump out was Captain Destancy in sportsman's attire, and with a gun in his hand. Somerset nodded, and Destancy spoke, informing the architect that he had been 10 miles up the line shooting waterfowl. That's Miss Power's carriage, I think, he added. Yes, said Somerset carelessly. She expects a friend, I believe. We shall see you at the castle again tonight? Destancy assured him that they would, and the two men parted. Captain Destancy, when he had glanced to see that the carriage was empty, going on to where a porter stood with a couple of spaniels. Somerset now looked again to the train. While his back had been turned to converse with the captain, a lady of 35 had alighted from the identical compartment occupied by Destancy. She made an inquiry about getting to Stancy Castle, upon which Somerset, who had not till now observed her, went forward, and introducing himself assisted her to the carriage, and saw her safely off. The stabs he had by this time disappeared, and Somerset walked on to his rooms at the Lord Quantock Arms, where he remained till he had dined, picturing the discomfiture of his alert rival when there should enter to him as princess, not Paula Power, but Miss Bella of the Regent's Theatre, London. Thus the hour passed, till he found that, if he meant to see the issue of the plot, it was time to be off. On arriving at the castle, Somerset entered by the public door from the hall as before, a natural delicacy leading him to Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.